Mass Psychology and Open Source, showing Jitsi. It's about a topic of, as you can realize, video conferencing. So when Corona came, something new happened, and people had to first adapt to home office. So this long-term discussion of digitalization now had pure practical reason to be adopted very fast. So here I can just talk about a situation we had here in Germany. Even old laptops could be sold for much money because people just needed some laptop to go online with some camera. Webcams were sold out. Video conferencing was needed as soon as possible, and it's still growing. Schools had to adapt to online courses. Universities did it. We even had universities who weren't able to set up a video conferencing system, and then I was asking, why do you finance your IT department? I didn't get an answer. So the thing is, people needed to adapt fast. First of all, the cloud is a big lie. So on the first day after this whole thing came up, Microsoft Teams halted and had an outage. The cloud really does not scale, it's all a big lie. Then of course you had YouTube, which downscaled videos. I mean, we have TCP IP, it will automatically downscale, so it's all big propaganda. People who don't really know what TCP IP is. Microsoft Azure was full. The cloud was full, you couldn't store anything, so it's a big lie. Google Cloud was full, it's also a big lie. I mean, the cloud, it's propaganda. So then we had people who first moved to proprietary alternatives, to Microsoft Teams, to Zoom, and Zoom failed miserably. They had first some app which was sending all tracking data to Facebook, and numerous scandals. Microsoft Teams is pure lock-in, and only corporate slaveholders still use it. There's some, like, you have many waves. You have some people who are fast adopters and some which are middle fast, and then some which are slow adopters. It depends on how fast they are, with which stage of realizing data scandals and what sucks they are. So there's of course an open source side of everything, and that's Jitsi, which what I want to talk about. The Jitsi, for the basic setup, it's like you get a VPS, install it, and then you have a web service running, and then you just go to like some instance.com and / some room, and then you can exchange some room to whatever you like, and this room then has this name, and everyone going to the same URI will be in that room. It's as simple as that. After closing, the room is gone. So Jitsi also has this feature of when only two people are speaking, it uses end-to-end encryption, and if more people are there, of course you have to decrypt it, and there's no complete end-to-end encryption. But we will come to the other side of Jitsi too. There's also some other alternative. It's more for about digital learning. It's called Big Blue Button. They also had some exploits too. Of course, if something gets used, people try to exploit it. We had many scandals of sex offenders going into video rooms which were not protected and so on. So people are learning. The masses are trying to learn. So open source can win here because it is low cost, easily deployable, it just works. But do you see a parallel to the Bitrate philosophy? So let's get a bit deeper into what this Jitsi is doing. It's using this WebRTC stuff. Most of the time, there you see the ugliness of web development. Like they have for mobile phones always some ugly apps which do tracking, but is not part of the talk. Because whatever you do on Android with Google in the background, it will track you, it will find you, and it will kill you if you say the wrong things. So the only alternative is like Mimolester. We need a complete open thing. Like the main problem is all the GSM stacks and so on being proprietary and closed source. It doesn't really work. But WebRTC is an extension for browsers, and it's more like peer-to-peer for browsers. So how do you find some connection from one browser, which is somewhere in the world, to another one? So first you need like an S10 server, that's what you used, and it tries to find the real IPs to connect to, or open some way to open a connection. Then RPRTC is more like scheduler to find some connection, and then you use this information to open some connections, like signaling with SIP, or then you have some media transport for the video and audio. Down there is that Opus and G711. That's not 911. That's 711. It's what is said in the specification should be supported. And in between there is this broker. So you can imagine like a big peer-to-peer network, and then you can use other protocols to send over. So you get like a TCP/IP or like a JavaScript object connection between clients. And of course you could connect to some server and then use this information for whatever you want to use to transfer. Like you could use it for file transfer, you could use it for video, you could use it for audio. But it can be dangerous too. So now we come to the bad side of Jitsi. Jitsi just works in this basic setup, but once you want to go like modifying it or changing something, it gets a really ugly beast. It's based in Java. Yes, now my slide could just stop. Yet another parasite is saying that WebRTC is yet another nice idea destroyed by JavaScript developers. And Joshua is saying terrible. Yes, it's terrible. Much of the encoding decoding is done in JavaScript on the client side. This is because otherwise you would have to send PCM or raw audio and video over this WebRTC connection. Internally, the Jitsi is using some XMPP server to manage the channels and to manage authentication. Yes, XMPP, it's XML over a connection locally. Okay. Then the easiest way to set it up is just get a VPS, a virtual machine somewhere, and just run use it just for Jitsi, because there's so many dependencies, there's so many assumptions. Just get it some subdomain and run it there. Don't do anything else there. It's like this new Docker-like thinking, don't care about other applications, I am the full system, and then you remove it. This is getting more and more common now, so people do not really care about how they pollute the namespace, how they pollute the system. But as said, Jitsi, if you look on the website about internals, it's using some nice object thing and premature optimization, but that's already what makes it ugly. So the thing is, can we somehow use this for Bitrage? Because as you've seen, Jitsi, it only made one thing right. This was, if you have the basic installation, it just works. It just does what it's supposed to do. But once you go try to use it for something else, like just take out maybe the channel thing or take out the web interface, it's not that easy, because if you look at the front end, it's a JavaScript front end using a framework over a framework, and then you have like this ugly abstraction you have in Java, like com Jitsi something, and you need some graphical user interface to simply edit one string. And but how could we use this WebRTC stuff to maybe have some raw byte stream and connect it to our world? Because web browsers will be everywhere, can we simplify it? So the simple idea is, maybe we could make it simpler. We nowadays have WebAssembly. With WebAssembly we can avoid JavaScript. We can run whatever virtual machine we want, just compile ffmpeg into it, then maybe run some simple virtual machine in web browser. I mean, look at Plan 9 or some simple Linux, it's just 20 megabytes. And it could be run in whatever you want. I mean, Firefox is, for some simple website, it's using 200 megabytes of RAM. There, simply a small virtual machine fits in. Then the WebRTC could be pipes, and this goes to some proxy, and then it goes to our world. So the thing is more to use the Unix philosophy of splitting things up, of having like a virtual environment. Like I mean, some years ago there was this QEMU in web browsers. You run simply run Linux in the in your web browser, people nowadays won't realize, with all the 8 cores they're running in on their mobile phone, they won't realize that they're running a whole Linux inside of their web browser. And because I'm next talking about my medical intention, why I'm running Jitsi 2, even because it's so ugly, we need to maybe make this more accessible. So first of all, I'm talking about a medical idea. In Germany, it's allowed to have like video conferencing. It's a big scam too, but that's why I use Jitsi, because if you only have 2 people using it, you have end-to-end encryption, and this is required when you're talking to a doctor, because doctor or talking to some medical professional has a higher standard on data privacy. So when you use like some web solution or web offerer where you have to register the patient, this is already not compliant with GDPR. Why? I mean, even just going to the doctor, the information that you go to the doctor is already part of the privacy. Like you go to psychiatrist, or you go to some urologist because of your impotency. This is already information you don't want anyone to know. So here we have to think in a different way. It's not like the standard model of you register and then you're part of it. No, that's not how it should be. And this is why I need something like Jitsi, which just works. You can just go in it and then you have a simple management. But everything runs on my service. No, there shouldn't be any middleman. No one should know that this patient actually went to me. And I can do that as a doctor with a technical background, but it's not something for the masses now. So this is what my intention is, why even if it's a web topic, it could be made more bitrage. So let's talk about mass psychology. Now we're going into a different way. Adaptation of things is normally not based on ideology. Even if you have GPL, even if you have this homeless person, RMS, always talking about how nice would be the world if they followed just his ideas, people do not really care about that. They do not care about saving the world. They do not care about dolphins. They do not care about eco-friendly. That's just people in their youth do, but they just need a practical need. And in such a crisis, it's even faster. So, but something fast changing also changes things which people think are static, which cannot be changed. So let's talk about social networks. We talked about Jitsi. Jitsi is growing now. Jitsi is becoming a big market. If you look at the changelog, there are really many new features coming out. Hopefully it won't bloat and get unusable. But maybe this will also move some people away from it to alternatives. That's the good thing of open source, just fork it. So here the thing is, Facebook there are two things coming together now. Facebook is big, it's changing things, and politicians realize this. But on the other side, like in Germany, we now have a censorship law, which says that every social network with more than 2 million people has to instantly give out all the information of the users to the police. If they just ask for it, they have to provide some API. There's no formal request or some judge in between. It just has to be done. So we know there is censorship, there is control, and we also know from Facebook they are doing premature censorship. Like I'm mostly with left politicians, and they just answered me something, and censorship department had to look at it. Took like half a day until I saw his comment. Yes, there's pure censorship, and we have. I think also people realize that through all the discussions of different information now, that Facebook and Twitter are not the future. So, as Helene is already saying, that there was a mass movement in Indian people to Mastodon a few months ago, and Twitter too, because they censored. Yeah, that depends on how far the government is going and if people realize it. In Germany, people are still using Twitter, also people who like to talk about privacy. But I think here's a big chance. And always remember this 2 million people. Always remember this, because if you're below it, you don't have to follow the rules. And just for a hint, Twitter was reporting last week that they make a deficit besides having user growth. And Facebook was reporting that they used like $100 million just to protect Zuckerberg. Yes, the capitalism is showing us its problems of unlimited growth. So mass psychology, mobile phones, this interesting parasite. We have Mamuleste, but why isn't there a mass market now? Why are people still using this ugly amateurish Android? Just a side note, whoever said Java for displaying should be used was a real big fool. So can the Android bloat help? So first of all, for Android, you have like a huge part of the world, of population, who only know the mobile phone. They only buy some mobile phone, they don't really care what's below it. They don't really care what software is used to display something, like people who then buy the iPhone because it's a luxury thing. And I realized the difference in the worldview when there was this big movement of speech analyzers and bots, especially for India, because there you have many illiterates, and these illiterates only use the recording and talking function of, for example, WhatsApp to communicate and to organize their local market. So they only use talking. And I think this is where things are moving. You have like the first world, you have educated people, but on the other side, you have the small people just using a tool, just using a computer as a tool. One thing we forgot in the corporate world, that computer is not just our brain dump from some agile meeting. No, it's people who actually want to use it for something useful. So can Android bloat help? Of course it will help, and it already does help. Google failed at Android versioning and deployment. They got too big, they lost, they get fed up and fed and slow. The build system still is Python 2. The modularization is impossible. Just look at the FOSDEM talks this year, where some people are trying to make it packages of Android, so it's maintainable, like every Linux distribution. But Google doesn't really care. They change the thing too fast. They just do what the big vendors want from them. But this blindness could be a chance. So we use what they produce, and on the other side, as slowly open source is producing a good alternative people use because they like it. What if users ever realize how they are spied on? It's a misery that actually, besides, we know that if you use Android, everything what you do is sent to some central database. Everything you do. Or if you use a mobile phone, there's a big tracking profile wherever you're going. So just following the repeated patterns where you go, and people can easily find you. Some states with who shot people on first sight in history would be happy about such a tool. So, but people are still using it. Millions of people, and you have tracking profiles like we saw in Corona, where they used to see if the lockdown was effective. And simply all the data was sent, yes, they say it's anonymously, but it was pseudonymously, that it's not working. People were moving around. But people were not seeing that this could hurt them. They have no connection between the data they saw and what it actually means for their basic civil rights. They only realize now and have protests against Corona because they have to wear a mask or they can't go out to their football game. So this is the difference in the worldview. And in Germany, for example, the data perverts, that's how I call all the people now who are requesting some more data of the people for big data or for artificial intelligence. Just simple, it's data perverts. It's people who are obsessed with data. And there, this is getting, this is a disease now. People who just simply request it because they can. So whenever you see someone like that and they request data and not looking at GDPR, call them data perverts. And if you ask who said that, give them my number, I will explain them. So will people wake up? I don't think in a direct way, in an indirect way. So it's like open source. So, Joshua is saying data pornography. I think it means data pornography. Let's see, mass psychology and open source. Open source and corporate software production have two differences. Corporate is like you have someone who is paid for it and has like 8 hours a day to adapt fast. And they have people in promotion, they have people who can speak to people and convince them to buy crap. That's their advantage. But open source has wins in the long run. So if there's something you can easily install, it will also win in the short run. That's what I'm talking about with Jitsi. But in the long run, you have a base and it can be modified and there it will slowly grow, like the Linux kernel. It slowly took over the world. It's now running on nearly every mobile phone. And it's cheap, it just works. It has no obvious cost. Of course, it has costs like maintenance and you have to look at it. But even with that, you have this phenomena of like GitHub that that's what people in Germany don't see. They think that they get more programmers from their computer science departments. But Google and so on, they realize that having people with all the open source available and people making videos about a nano degree gives them professionals all over the world, because with no cost to educate yourself about some topic makes more people listen to it. So this is where open source will win in the long run. Then there's the thing where open source loses its extended features, or if someone wants something. But this can be mixed. This can be mixed, like you have a base and you have people who are educated and dedicated to add support. Look at Red Hat, how they make money. I mean, there are still people in Germany who say you can't make money with open source, and then I tell them, look at Red Hat, and then they stop talking. I don't know why. I mean, they're making like, I think it's $2 billion US dollar now per year. And there's always this corporate market which says that open source will never win, but I think the future is more mixed. It wins in the long run. So dialectics and mass psychology. There's this thing that we have too many old people everywhere, like in Europe, yes, that's a European thing or a US thing, that those old people tend to want stability. They don't want change. You have the young people who want change, they want to change the world, they want to be revolutionary, but you have the old people who want everything to be stable so they don't have to adapt. And there's those people who always try to find the negative. So when they wake up, they always try to find the negative, but it's too easy. It's like finding the positive actually requires you to use your brain. And this is what I want to just say with that slide is, please think of the positive, even if it's just 2%, if it's 1%, think of the positive of some change. Of course, realize the negative stuff, and if it's hurting someone, but think of the positive. It's not like this, oh, this will never work. Like if you hear never, never is never. I mean, there's just some basic natural laws which we will not easily break, but I don't want to say never. So first of all, I will look at the channel. There were some comments. Joshua is saying that he tried to explain that Jitsi was not web, but XMPP for web developers, and those people couldn't grasp that it's not a web browser. Well, it's broken English. I think he means that the developers couldn't easily realize that there's something not being the web. Yes, we have. He says XMPP based protocol. I don't think people really know what protocols are and that there are differences. They hear it in some introductory lecture, but in the end they just apply practical things and everything's done over HTTP in the end. That's how I see it. He says that Jitsi Meet, that's the app, is injected in the XMPP client and no HTTP involved anymore. Yes, you're sure that. Yes. That's what I said with WebRTC. You once get a connection to some server and then you can do whatever you want over it. But using XML encoded in JavaScript objects over some WebRTC object, yeah, that's really ugly. Let's say then, Joshua is saying, he says that HTTP 1.1 should be used for static sites. And some plugin to access the platform. In the meantime, you should get your real client. And then he said use Quick, some version to make use of this as main driver with a 100% JS website. Well, Joshua, I think that this Quick and WebSockets is just a sign of the web getting too bloated. It's like looking at automobiles. The automobile basic concept didn't change over 100 years. People want an automobile, it just moves. And all this fancy stuff you add to it, or fancy cars from the 1970s, they just vanished, because it was about what I said about people want something because of a practical reason. And Quick or WebSockets, they don't give any advantage. They could be used, but they are too complex, like multiplexing connections. That's already too complex for the basic web developer. What are you saying? Joshua is saying that Jitsi Meets, it's just one WebSocket. Yes, WebSocket allows multiplexing of connections. Two is to avoid, one is acceptable. Yes, I agree that things shouldn't be too complex, because it gets unmaintainable. Like all the JavaScript objects over objects over objects, you can't really maintain them. Yes, yeah, Joshua is agreeing that the underlying protocol is good. No need for Quick. But there's a need for Quink. Always remember that. There's always a need for Quink. Because Quink is a nice guy, okay? Yes, he's a really nice guy. So, we had 10:45. Okay, as Catalyst said on the channel, he's saying that he can't give the talk because he's ill, but I hope, Catalyst, you're listening, that you will send us the slides so we can put them online and watch them that way. That would be nice. Or maybe, yes, Catalyst, are you there? Can you send me the slides? Then I will show them and read them out.